Welcome to My Opium Movies. This week, we have another escaped child movie, so to speak. Baby's Day Out, a John Hughes classic, which is kind of like Home Alone, but there's a baby, and Joe Mantegna beats the crap out of himself chasing a baby. It's very strange, but it's very slapsticky and very stupid and very fun and very light for a summer day. So if you can find this one, watch it, and just, it's as light as a summer breeze. Enjoy, guys. Thanks. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we watched, well, Home Alone for Babies. We saw Baby's Day Out. Thank you for joining our Patreon feed. If you're there at this level, you're getting all the extra episodes. You're getting Mission Briefing. You're getting our back catalog. You're getting Matt complaining about how he should be hired by Hollywood. If you go to the next level up, you also get riffs where we have now added Batman Forever. We've added Star Wars, Attack of the Clones. And coming soon is Star Trek number 5, where Kirk beats up God. I'm Nick Hoffman, host and panelist on CineProv. And on panel we have...
Jeremy.
Yeah, I should be hired by Hollywood. If you need a script doctor, hit me up.
Your name is Matt Quinn.
Yes, Matthew W. Quinn.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter and I'm on Amazon.
And it's okay. Kelly is not on this feed. She doesn't pay for the Patreon, so you can plug any fan fiction you write.
Do you write Omegaverse?
Oh, hell no. I do have my dignity.
I just found out what that was a week ago. I blame Lindsay Ellis for that. I will never get that out of my brain.
Oh, God, that's so funny. So, you're doing Patreon this month. We can tell you because you know, you're listening, you're reading our monthly prescriptions, right? But in honor of this coming out in November, we're going to do a Thanksgiving episode on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the one true Thanksgiving movie that's frankly worth anything. And it was written by John Hughes, which this was also written, well, I say written by John Hughes. He just switched out the characters' names. But so he wrote the Home Alone script and then gave himself credit for this one. Jeremy, you want to give us our plot synopsis?
Sure. Nick already gave the short version, which is basically Home Alone for Babies. The long version is there are these three criminals who want to make money by kidnapping a baby. So they pose as baby photographers, kidnap a rich baby because it's a John Hughes movie where people are impossibly rich. And the baby is a big fan of a book called Baby's Day Out, where a baby goes on all sorts of adventures. So when the baby escapes from the three criminals, he goes on the adventures in the book while the criminals try to hunt him down, and hilarity ensues.
Yes. I mean, and so this is, I guess, in some way, a reverse Home Alone, where it's out in the world as opposed to here. Just imagine, like, there's so many better books the kid could have been reading. So we're reading the Death Wish book or whatever Cobra was based off of. Like
Where the Wild Things Are. That's him like eating them. Like he's got his like monster suit on. He's eating the criminals.
Oh, God help me. We also learned that this whole thing is the mother's fault very early on, which was a hilarious writer, I noticed. Like, so this is like old school stuffy waspy people, right? And they hire a photographer so that the baby can be on the social page, right? The social life page of the Chicago Tribune, which is something that's been happening for generations, which is like the most white person bullshit I've ever heard in my life.
Okay, because yeah, I was wondering, is that a real thing? It sounds like something people say to make fun of rich people.
I mean, it sounds like a Victorian New York Times nonsense, right? Like, I say, look at Muffy. Like, it is hilarious.
The small town paper I used to work at had baby announcements and whatnot, but that was a small town.
Well, yeah, like small town where everybody knows everybody. That's fine. This is just bragging.
This is like Upper East Side nonsense. I know it's Chicago. I just it's John Hughes
Town.
It's not
geography. It's a mindset.
It's John Hughes Town. Like these people live in an estate like Richie Rich, man. Yeah. This is nonsense.
Yeah, they have a nanny, even though as far as I know, the mom doesn't work, and they have a butler, even though as far as I know, they have no other staff. So I'm not sure what exactly the butler's purpose is.
No. This is a family where money begets money. I think the dad just goes to the track all day. Like it's He works in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, but he's just like buying prostitutes and selling prostitutes. Like, there's nothing that happens here other than we see him riding in a very expensive car. And then the staff waves goodbye to him like he's, and the Sound of Music. Like, all of this is designed to make me hate these people. And at least when you have John Hughes direct writing for kids, they then can be precocious kids, right? Like, I want Ferris Bueller, who is also shockingly wealthy, but he's just kind of a prat.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the team that believes Ferris Bueller's a fucking dick.
He's the worst.
I cannot stand him.
Although, like...
You sound like my grandma.
Well, then your grandma's right.
Yeah.
But, like, he's, like, mugging for the camera. I mean... I think the joke that made me realize he's an asshole came much later, but it's at the end of the first Deadpool when he comes out. I'm just like, oh, he is Deadpool.
Yeah.
He's just an agent of chaos. The guy's a prick.
Yeah.
The problem is this is a kid's movie, kind of, sort of. I almost want it to be like, instead of tricking a nanny, which feels really bad about it, and that's the old lady or the old man from Home Alone. Like, there's the emotional center, which really doesn't matter here. You should trick, like, a babysitter that goes to the same high school as all those kids. That would be something.
They could have had Sloan. She was younger than the other two.
Well, and, I mean, this is 93 this came out?
94.
94? Yep. So, I mean, she's a little old, but not crazy old. You could euthanize her. I mean, let me try that again.
Don't euthanize her, please.
Joke them up. Classic Hoffman joke.
And I'm classic straightening it. Mm-hmm. There's a plan.
It's like you've listened to the podcast. So the husband's like, aren't you going to get old man? He's been photographing our family for generations. And she's like, no, I found new people, which makes her responsible for the kidnapping, effectively.
Well, they are responsible for kidnapping. They actually kidnapped the baby.
Well, right. But they set it up that had they used the original photographer, this wouldn't have happened, which is a real weird dick move. But like, dads in John Hughes movies are always the strict disciplinarians. Moms are almost always missing.
Well,
it's very weird. John Hughes is a weird dude.
Well, the mom comes off as a bit vapid. You know, she's obsessed with getting her kid in the society page, but the dad forgets to kiss his son goodbye. They have to guilt trip him into doing it.
Well, he's not a... Well, because he... Well, it's because he has so many other secret families. How many kids do you have to kiss every day across Chicagoland? I mean, we could have had a celebrity cameo from Harry Carey. That's all I'm saying. Holy cow, this kid has been missing.
Wait, when did John Candy die? Because...
Oh, it was around here, but I think it was a little later.
He had a kids' TV show around this time called Camp Candy. I think I watched it.
Yeah, because I...
Put a pin in that. We're getting back to that.
I totally expected him to be the bus driver, who is basically John Candy.
That is a John Candy role in a nap. Or the fat guy taking a nap at the entry to the construction site.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what we need. Like, you scratch out a whole bunch of guys from... Second City. Like, that's what you kind of need. Just a bunch of, like...
Yeah, John Candy for the bus driver, Eugene Levy for the security guard.
Oh, man. Republican senator and presidential candidate Fred Thompson was in this.
Showing much more energy than he did during his presidential run.
And he's fine in this. It's not to make fun of him in any way, but, like, that's a role... Like, his second in command could have been, like, Eugene Levy, right? Yeah. Like, someone to add a little bit of levity, because whenever he's on...
Martin screen, Short.
Oh, God. Like, a guy who comes up below his armpit. Like, Martin Short is nipple high on Fred Thompson at best. Yeah. At best!
Well, Fred Thompson deadpanning is kind of funny. Like, you know, drop the boo-boo.
Well, but effectively, Fred Thompson is doing a Tommy Lee Jones impression from The Fugitive
previous
episode. And he's like, I'm going to catch these guys just to make sure your kid is safe. and like, he's really tight upper lip, which is fine because, like, there are those scenes in even Home Alone where, the mom is desperately trying to get home. John Hurt is dealing with the kids. And, you know, you have emotional drama. But it's just, it feels like... Two separate movies that are crammed together.
Well, yeah, because the stuff with the baby and the kidnappers is hilarious. I was watching it on the exercise bike at the gym, and I was laughing so much that I was afraid of disturbing people. The stuff with the mom and the nanny, where they're all sitting there, it's all about crying. I feel so sorry for them. It's legitimately poignant.
Even worse than that was going into the house of the woman who thought they had kidnapped the kid is like, what is this doing in the movie?
It does not belong at all.
What is this doing in the movie?
Because there's just an old pervert on the corner who like takes like $1,000 from the dad and be like, yeah, that kid, that woman just keeps popping out children. And you're just like, all right, pervert.
Yeah, like not helping was that the woman was played by the mother from The Crow, who was a druggie. So immediate flashback to that when she came on the screen is like, damn, this is the worst typecasting ever.
I mean, we can do it because the dude died during the filming of it.
Yep.
In fact,
same year.
I mean, and we do good movies. I mean, we technically have done a lot of good movies on this. But whether or not it's an episode is another story. I think we can make an episode of it. Like, there are good movies, we just have nothing to joke about. That's the problem.
Brandon Lee died.
I know, right? I mean, that's the problem with it. Like, you know how he was a promising young martial artist or the son of a father who also died tragically? Mm-hmm. What if it was funny if he died making a, you know, a B-plus movie?
Mm-hmm. About a guy who dies tragically.
That's right.
Yep.
And rises from the dead and kills people.
Yeah, but did Brendan Lee rise from the dead?
We don't know. He didn't.
And at this point, he'd be pretty far gone. Maybe he was in the second Poltergeist movie.
The cult leader?
No, one of the Skellingtons. We were rewatching horror movies. My wife had never seen Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
I'll ask you, actually.
Yep.
Okay, so she'd never seen Silence. Mm-hmm. She absolutely loved it. One of those people who was afraid it'd be too scary, and it's the most entrangling, fantastic movie ever made. One of my favorites. It's true. So there are three other movies with Hannibal Lecter in them. Manhunter, Red Dragon, and Hannibal.
And Manhunter.
I said Manhunter.
There's two versions of Manhunter.
What would you say is the second best?
This is the hottest of takes, but I would say Red Dragon. I like that. Like, everyone in the world prefers Manhunter, but it's so 80s that I just can't watch it.
Honestly, the problem was I saw Silence, absolutely loved it, and then watched the other three, and I can't remember if they're good or not. That's why I'm asking people who remember, because I own all of them.
Like, Red Dragon, it's solid. It's straightforward. It doesn't try to mimic Silence of the Lambs.
Where's the one where they're eating Ray Liotta's brain?
I think that's
Hannibal,
the second one.
And I hate that movie.
The one where they feed people, the guy's whole revenge plan to feed Hannibal to his pigs.
That's right. But like, there's just a scene where Ray Liotta is sitting there and they CGI off the top of his head and like... anyway, I mean, I'm letting Wifey direct our creepy viewing this year.
Has she seen Event Horizon?
She saw it with me when we did it for an episode, which is Robusto. She's seen Deep Rising too. For Christmas, she got me the Friday the 13th pack. So I'm just like, randomly pick one from the middle. That it doesn't matter which one. Between 3 and 6, just pick one. We're good. And she has not seen the 2018 Halloween. She saw the original. Mm-hmm. She saw 1, 2, 3, and 4. But she has not seen that one. And I'd say that's better than 4 through 8. So we're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. We're there. Anyway, so Baby Stay Out. After the photographers were introduced to, who are the three actors? Do you remember?
Joe Mantegna. Yeah. Joey Pants. And the other guy I don't remember, although he's... That's the
voice of Fat Tony.
No, the third guy. Like who...
And the guy who looks like Biff Tannen.
Yeah. He's one of those guys where... You look at him and you're like, oh, I know that guy. But
yeah, he's a meathead. He always plays a meathead.
Yeah.
And they've kidnapped the real photographer, tied him up in a warehouse somewhere, and have stolen his appointment book so they can then infiltrate some rich family and kidnap their kid for $5 million. And it was that just happened to be Baby Bink, which is like a nickname for some waspy fourth generation name, his real unlucky day.
Yeah, and so the kidnappers like dress in like candy colored clothing. They're all wearing wigs, which, you know what, credit to Joey Pants, who is a bald man. He is bald in this movie, which he could be wearing a terrible wig throughout, and the only time he's wearing a wig, it's intended to look terrible. You know?
And they all pretend to be French.
They're playing gay, I guess. But yeah, I mean, otherwise this cast is actually pretty fleshed out. Which makes me think that John Hughes was somewhere floating off screen. Because, like, the mom is played by Laura Flynn Boyle, which in the early 90s was money.
Before she was known as just Jack Nicholson's girlfriend.
That's right. Yeah. And Cynthia Nixon as well. As
yeah. Someone called Daniel because she was in Twin Peaks.
Or Jeremy. I mean, I love Twin Peaks. I love me some Twin Peaks hard.
Did you call for a photographer?
I did a call for a... No, we called for pizza. Finally, the other guy you know is Brian Haley, who was in previous episode Little Giants as the aggressive dad for the meathead. Mm. And in a... Well, I mean, this is, again, a question for Jeremy, but like...
Spike's
I don't know.
Dad kidnapped baby.
That's exactly it.
Spike's dad gets $5 million.
If you like this movie or not, which is the same year, by the way, Gran Torino. He's in Gran Torino. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you settle on Clint Eastwood movies.
That's probably his last essential movie.
I wouldn't disagree.
No.
You didn't like The Mule, where he's just having old man three ways?
The Mule, I swear, like every time he said a line of dialogue, I was wondering if he was actually going to remember the whole thing.
This dude has been in everything as a heavy. In fact, he was even the color commentator for an NFL Blitz game. So that's all you need to know.
The football version of NBA Jam.
No. And I guess, since we're recording it now and all this thing, speaking of Little Giants, we have Rick Moranis back doing commercials alongside Deadpool, Ryan Reynolds, and it's something. Oh, and he's also... For Jeremy, I guess, probably only in that terrible remake of Pelham 1-2-3.
I actually like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a solid little movie.
Maybe it's a stay tuned then. I have not
rewatched it. Yeah, I will go to bat for that. I actually watched it a couple months ago.
Okay. Well, then he's in a movie that we both agree is good, which is The Departed. And he's also in a movie that's terrible called Pearl Harbor. Okay, we can agree that he's in Pearl Harbor, which is terrible.
Pearl Harbor sucks, and I miss you.
He's also in Stay Tuned, Mars Attacks, and he's in McHale's Navy and That Darn Cat. So that can flush 1997 right down the toilet.
Wow.
I know. But for a giant meathead actor like that, at least he's funny because he delivers the lines. If you can't deliver the lines humorously, you ended up in The X-Files. If you could, you ended up in this movie. At this point... As you mentioned, the photographers showed up and they make fun of Laura Flynn Boyle's outfit. So she goes to change, leaving a bunch of really creepy men with pencil-thin mustaches alone with a child, which, again, I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I've read What to Expect When You Have a Toddler, but you don't leave your child around with like people who look like that.
Yeah, and even for a brief second, you think they have enough common sense not to go along with it. When they go, can we leave the child alone with us so we can... You'll get his authentic expression. I sound German.
They kind of are doing for just for a second. Accent.
They're like, really?
But yeah, the mom is stupid enough to where, you know, having a bad dress is paramount above everything else.
This is all waspy nonsense. And again, like, if there was more tongue-in-cheek nonsense, I mean, that's kind of the, like, Home Alone 2 is a terrible movie, but it is. It is a really trash movie, but at least the whole point is Kevin is reconciling the fact that his family has money and then meets the pigeon lady who does not.
Yeah, it's such a weird through line in John Hughes movies. You have the old scary guy with the shovel from Home Alone, the homeless woman from Home Alone 2, the poor woman in this. It's like, what's...
Or even in like good movies, like The Breakfast Club, there's the guy from the other side of the tracks wearing the leather jacket who performs like cunnilingus on her, like in the middle of, in front of the principal, which now has become a weird fetish for her. Yeah. She'll never be normal again. Ooh, call me, put me in detention. Previous episode, Breakfast Club. You're welcome, America.
Yeah, that's another weird through line in John Hughes movies. Rapey stuff.
Real rapey stuff. We'll get there. And we'll also get to someone ripping off the end of... what's the Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie?
Trading Places.
We rip off the end of Trading Places in this. Oh, God, help me. Anyway, so the three dudes shuffle her out the window. Or what was the baby's name?
Bink.
Bink out the window, and of course, like any good movie, this is played by twins, Adam and Jacob Wharton. which meant he had terrible parents at one point.
And they leave a ransom note made out of cutout magazines, which is so cliche.
There is a new podcast, which is great, called it's an Onion podcast called The Topical. And they did a headline, probably in July, that was like, local magazine really helps out kidnapper by having all the right words. And he's like, luckily, this article had the word joyful. I was looking for that all day. This clearly saved me at least an hour of looking.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be something along the lines of, you know, kidnappers hit hardest by newspaper shutdowns.
Listen to The Topical. I mean, they're not giving us money, but it's very funny. Anyway, so yeah, at this point, we end up with a series of unfortunate events. And you can pick and choose what you want to talk about, but there's essentially like a handful of set pieces. They go back to the hideout where Joey Pants is expected to read the story that they kidnapped with the kid, Baby's Day Out.
But Joey Pants is not very literate, which is actually kind of sad. And so he sings the kid a song about losing his job and having to be on unemployment.
Which is set to what tune? Do you remember?
Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
It's something like that.
Oh, yeah. Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Mary had a little lamb, right. He brought a sheep to work one day and he got his ass fired. And you're just like, what's going on? But yeah, so Joe Montagna and that meathead guy, Bill. Vico, who's played by Brian Haley. Biff Tannen. Biff Tannen, Eddie, and Norby, who's Joey Pants. Joey Pants is a better nickname. They're like chilling back at their hideout, which is at like the attic of this place that has a clock.
Yeah.
Looks like it's in a ratty old hotel.
What's that place in New York, that weird triangle-shaped building?
Flatiron.
It's kind of like that.
It is. I mean, and again, I don't know Chicago. I've been to New York. If you've been to Chicago once, but this looks like a like a Wes Anderson set, right? Like the exterior has a clock in it. It's an attic apartment. It's Tim Burton-y. Like, it's very over the top, very colorful. It's very weird. But between the song and trying to read the story, Joey Pants falls asleep. The baby does not, and it crawls out the window and starts to climb up the fire escape up to the roof. And like, we already get that these guys don't know how to deal with kids. You know, Joe Montagna being like the brains, quote unquote, says he's not going to deal with kids. He's just trying to retire after kidnapping these kids. And Brian Healy is eating Fruit Loop knockoffs in like the most childish way possible. Like, he's trying to stack them up as high as possible, strategically pour the milk. This is all, I guess it's on the director, but it's John Hughes nonsense. This is 100% making the sandwich out of Captain Crunch in Breakfast Club.
Oh, God.
But, like, less sexy. Because, I mean, come on. We all wanted the goth girl.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
That's one of my biggest complaints about that movie, the makeover.
Oh, my God. After they smoke pot together, the movie goes to shit.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, the goth girl is the best part of the 80s, man. Yeah. Whatever. Jeremy and I are together on this.
Yes.
Anyway, the baby crawling to the attic is where the movie becomes Home Alone. And every year when I rewatch Home Alone, you know, after a couple eggnogs, you forget about how the whole movie is building up character. Character. You know who Kevin McAllister is. You know how he relates to his big brother. You know the neighbor down the street they all think is a killer is just a kindly old man. That scene in the church is heartbreaking where he can't see his granddaughter. The action part takes 20 minutes.
Yeah. And right? That's, yeah, for this, it's like a whole hour.
This one feels more like a Three Stooges bit. The other one feels like a movie.
Well, for most of this movie, it works. It's only until it starts to really go downhill after the crotch-burning sequence.
Well, and the thing is, I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm just saying it doesn't feel like a movie. This has, if you broke this up, this is a comedy episode, like five-episode TV show. At the end, like, you're right. I'm glad the kid gets home. And as a... what they say, he's 18 months old?
Nine months old. He crawls but doesn't walk.
But he's a very advanced 9-month-old to work a lighter. But whatever. As a 9-month-old, he takes the FBI to the kidnappers.
I started to lose suspension of disbelief.
At that part?
No, earlier when you were at the construction site, that's when the problem was. Because I can understand people not paying mind to a kid wandering around at a park. But at a construction site, then it starts getting stupid.
My thought was watching this movie, did the kid die immediately? Did he fall off that roof and they're chasing a ghost? Because no one else sees this kid the entire movie until the end. I was really thinking at one point, I'm like, is this like whatever the character's name's, Eddie, like seeing his money drifting away? So he's hallucinating the kid's still alive and he's like, we're gonna get him. And is like,
or did they all fall off the roof together and now they're in hell?
Oh, dude, they're the three fat ghosts from Casper, the uncles.
Oh, God.
The ghostly trio. That again, previous episode, but like I could do that episode once a year, every year for the rest of my life. That movie is the weirdest, most nonsense. And he turns into Devon Sawa at the end, and they're floating, and it's romantic, but also horrifying. I'm going to watch that again. That one always makes my skin crawl. Like, that's a weird freaking movie. I mean, I don't know. I can't even tell you what happens next.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about this movie. It's just a series of set pieces. You could easily re-edit them, and it wouldn't matter.
He crawls across a board connecting the villain's hideout to another building, and then the weight balance issue means probably, I think, it's the first crotch shot. The board goes up into someone's groin.
Vico tries to cross. He can't. He's too heavy. It slams back and hits Eddie in the face, knocks him unconscious. And then they try to jump from building to building, but Eddie, still being half like out of it, Joey Pants and Vico make it. But Eddie falls like 400 stories into a dumpster. And that's kind of it. The kid then just crawls into an elevator, ends up in a woman's house, like ends up crawling down the street, and that's it.
He gets like carried off by a delivery man who doesn't know he's in his box or whatever's happened. I was talking to my dad about this, and he said a 9-month-old weighs about as much as a small dog. Someone would notice.
It's such a silly, basic premise that like, that's why I'm saying it's a ghost kid. No one notices it because it's everything. Like
you need to join TV Tropes and create the Wild Mass guessing page for this. You know, the kid is really dead.
I mean, it's also, God help me, Netflix added the Smurf movies, which are truly atrocious. And again, I just got HBO Max. And so we're like watching the old school Smurfs. And my daughter immediately tells it, look, it's the Smurfs. And it's the same plot device. Clumsy gets knocked unconscious and ends up in a box. And you're just like, okay. I mean, it's the stupidest thing. It's, it's like when people like sneak aboard boats and ships. And you're just like, okay, this is not a plot device. Yeah. This is just people being assholes. That's what we got. That's this movie. But they end up getting down out of the building. And then the kid follows the book, which we're introduced to in the opening credits. Right? Mm-hmm. So next is a department store.
I don't know if they ever actually went to the department store. He gets on the bus and somehow follow him from the bus into a hotel and ends up in the hotel daycare. I think it's a hotel.
No, that is a department store. The woman who is, I think she's just a clerk, sees a random baby and figures that he's escaped the daycare. And puts him in the daycare with a pin on his back, and then the baby just immediately crawls back out.
In the meantime, our three hooligans antagonize a fat woman so much he beats the hell out of them.
And then the baby ends up in her carry-on, which is why they keep harassing her. But the baby escapes and ends up in the department store. At this point, we could pick any set piece. The one I suggest we talk about is that freaking zoo scene. Yeah, this is the Trading Places scene. The baby escapes, crawls through the park, through the zoo. And again, no one knows it's a baby that's unaccompanied. The one time we see one is like in a park where this woman's like, who's your mommy? And the baby looks at this random woman sitting on a park blanket. And they're like, okay, and they just walk away. Yeah. And you're just like, man, I guess Chicago's just where you want to kidnap kids because no one gives a shit.
Yep.
They go to the zoo and they follow baby tracks, which is kind of the best joke. And yeah, They end up finding the baby in a gorilla cage, and hilarity ensues. Matt, you love this scene. Tell me about it.
Yeah, they keep trying to find ways to... They try and get the one who has the longest arms, and Joey Pants immediately hides his hands in his pockets because he knows what's about to happen. So yeah. Biff Tannen has to reach in and pull him out, and the gorilla, at one point, just gets tired of him and breaks his hand. And then, eventually, Eddie has to do it himself, and the gorilla just picks him up and throws him into the bars under the cage. He ends up literally crucified.
And an orangutan just keeps playing with him, which is kind of the best. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the cage opens to allow the gorilla into somehow a smaller outdoor unit. Like, this whole zoo has a real weird vibe about it. Yeah. Because it feels like an abandoned mall on the inside.
One of those zoos, they didn't really have habitats for the animals. They kept them in small cages.
Yes, but... this is 1994. Like, this isn't that... well, actually, it is that long ago. It's 26 years ago. Because remember, we're old.
Yeah, I keep thinking World War II is 50 years ago. Because I still somehow still think it's 1990.
Or, to put it more appropriately for this county, this is when Newt Gingrich became Speaker of the House. And now he's in prison or whatever he's doing. No, his wife is the ambassador to the Vatican. Because she's his third wife, and the Pope doesn't like him. But yeah, that's true. I met him. He said it was better that the Belgians invaded the Belgian Congo for his PhD dissertation, because they left roads behind.
Yeah.
I'm going to check on that, because that seems like something wouldn't fly after like 1940.
Well, he wrote this in the 70s, but you can read it. It's not good. And then he made a power play to become the department chair at the University of West Georgia, and he got fired. So... although I guess my dad agrees with him, but that is a story for a different Democratic day. But yeah, no, I mean, the man in the gorilla suit does a good job. It's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. And it is better than the Trading Places gorilla suit.
We need to see if there was a famous actor in the gorilla suit, because I could swear he was like some famous costume person.
He was not. Although he is credited in the credits, so I will take it.
Yeah.
The gorilla suit looks good. Rick Baker did the special effects here. The guy who was in the gorilla suit is a guy named John Alexander, who was an alien in Hellboy 2, an alien in Planet of the Apes, or a gorilla in Planet of the Apes. He was Mikey in Men in Black 1, and he was also a bodysuit full costume guy in Men in Black 2, but a different one. He has a career playing guys in suit.
Laura Flynn Boyle was in Men in Black 2 as well. She was the
gorilla
alien chick.
Oh, she was. That's right. He was also the gorilla in Mighty Joe Young.
Hmm.
And he was in, the Country Bears movie as one of the bears.
Oh, God.
Oh, that is an atrocious movie. Ooh.
We're the bears that sing for Nick. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Oh,
there you go.
Drinking beer until we're sick.
That's a good one.
Anyway, the movie ends. I guess the last set piece is a construction.
Yeah.
Which when it started getting stupid.
Well, actually, is this before or after the crotch is lit on fire?
It's after the crotch. We
need to talk about the park.
Because I think the park is after the zoo. Okay. The baby crawls down a pipe from the zoo into the park, and the troublesome trio follow him. They briefly recapture him. Then a couple of cops show up. And
one played by Neil Flynn, the janitor from Scrubs and from The Fugitive, where he also plays a cop, and from every other movie where he also plays a cop.
And at this point, the fact that the child has been kidnapped is on all the major media. And he actually is on the screen on the TV screen briefly, but no one sees him. And so the cop's like, there's a kidnapped baby around here. And Eddie's got him his coat over the baby and trying to make nice to the cops. And meanwhile, baby has found his lighter.
Well, and is
engaging in some ball torture.
They have pulled over very quickly to capture the baby. And so the cops are drawn in by the fact that what is very clearly a pedophile's van is parked on the side of the road, right? And there's these three men sitting next to each other on a park bench staring at their own car. And they're like, hey, buddy, you know anything about this car over here? And he's like, no, I couldn't possibly, officers. And the baby has taken out of his jacket pocket a Zippo lighter and started to ignite the man's crotch on fire. And this scene lasts about 2.5 minutes, and it's the funniest fucking thing I've seen
in
a very long time.
He's trying very hard not to spill the beans about his burning beans, if you get my drift.
And Joe Munt, I almost added like 9 extra syllables to his name. Joe Montaigne, Fat Tony, is losing his shit at this. And it is, the problem is, not the problem, he's the straight man. He's the Joe Pesci proxy. And he is, this scene puts him on the level of Joe Pesci to me. And again, Joe Pesci does it in a much more condensed area, but here he is clearly suffering, and it is truly fantastic. And he limps the rest of the movie. And at one point after this, Joey Pants looks at the hole in his crotch and like makes some reference. He's like, oh, he's seen just the beans or something. And just,
oh, at some point they, you know, they bring up their Boy Scout skills about stamping out a fire by stamping on his crotch repeatedly.
Oh my God. Brian Haley has, Vigo has these like, I mean, he's wearing Timberlands or some nonsense, and he's just ball crushing him with these like Doc Martens. And you just hear this. God. And again, this is a scene right out of the first Home Alone where the tarantula is on Pesci's chest and it jumps away at the last second. And Daniel Stern with the crowbar just starts hitting him on the chest. And he looks up and goes, God, no. And he just, that first Home Alone movie is a masterpiece. And for a while, it was one of the top like grossing films of all time.
Yeah, it saved Fox. They were going bankrupt and that pulled them back.
And it's got that John Williams score. The problem is with this movie, and we'll get to the end here eventually, is since everything has almost been done before, it's almost a novelty that I remembered that it exists. It's not that I'm like, I mean, yeah, you can go out and find it. It's on HBO Max, which is how I saw it. But it is, there's nothing special about it. It's just a comedy. Yeah. There's not like an epic soundtrack. There's not. But like all these characters are C actors. Like, didn't Home Alone come out the same year as Goodfellas?
Yeah.
Like, and so like Joe Pesci is like one of the
biggest actors. He had the best greatest year ever.
And Macaulay Culkin was like the top paid kid actor of all time.
Yeah.
And his parents are played by people. Everyone here is like, oh, this would be a fun sitcom if it showed up. Mm-hmm. Like the dad could be played by someone on Wings for all I know. Like.
Yep.
Anyway, the kid fucking ends up on a construction site because none of these like red meeting motherfuckers who are about to watch a Bears game could notice a child wandering onto an active construction site.
I did not have any problem with the movie until this point because, yeah, a kid in the city street or in a park, sure, you see kids there. Little kids are not on construction sites.
But it's like everyone is intentionally looking away, like the other direction. So they don't even notice the other meatheads on the...
Yeah, three...
You wouldn't notice three dudes, one wearing a shitty Italian suit.
Unless they thought he was like someone from the company, but even then, they're all yelling and screaming and acting foolish.
Even if Joey Pants reached up and put on a hard hat, you could believe anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but they're just wandering around. And again, this is a scene where the kid just crawls slightly out of frame. It's all Rick Baker magic nonsense. And then they get the shit kicked out of them by a construction site. And again, these guys are just like, you know what's great? The Cubs this year. They're going all the way. And you just hear, as Vigo falls 45 stories into a dumpster filled with concrete.
And Eddie gets stranded on like a hanging chain from a crane, and the construction site is shut down for the night.
Speaking of Kleinescotsy, time changes, days.
That was actually a really good scene.
It was
a
gorgeous shot.
Yeah, that was gorgeous. Yeah. It's like, what is this doing in this movie?
As Fat Tony watches the seasons change because of a union strike. Like, all of a sudden, like, he's watching off in the distance as the sun burns behind Chicago. Yeah. As though for one scene, you have a cinematographer show up. He goes, I can fix your movie.
Yeah.
And the set piece is funny, but like at the end you have Joey Pants, who was covered head to toe in concrete because he fell into a concrete mixer. You have Vico covered in garbage, like literally like Staten Island dump garbage. And then you have Fat Tony, who is like visited with the star child at the end of 2001 as the sun has fallen behind him.
And meanwhile, the baby somehow knows how to get to a soldier's home. Because that's in the book.
That's how the book ends.
And that's when mom and dad and the nanny come and get him. But the baby, one last baby bit, you know, the world's youngest 90s precocious kid.
Which again, John Hughes, the old man who first picks him up and recognizes him as the kid from the TV, mm-hmm. is the guy who runs Duncan's toy chest from Home Alone 2. Yep. The one who gives Macaulay Culkin the turtle doves. And they start singing like it's like a VFW hall or something, and they start singing old, you know, vet song.
Yeah, they found one that wasn't obscene.
Right. One where there wasn't just pornography everywhere or drinking. But again, like, my toddler's smart. If she ended up at like an arboretum, she'd be asking where the truffula trees were. Like, she wouldn't know where to go from there. And this kid ends up taking a yellow cab to an old folks' home without taking, like, and again, like, toddlers and infants crawl quickly, but you know how quickly they are? You're like watching something on TV, you lose half a second, and they're at the top of the stairs. They've crawled 10 feet. This kid has crawled 45 miles across the whole Chicagoland area. Ugh.
And he points out to everyone where the kidnappers are hiding. They start hearing him babbling, and I swear they used the Hellraiser tolling bell. When Eddie first starts hearing the baby talking, he starts to panic.
Yeah, so we should get there. Fred Thompson comes in and he goes, well, I've got news. I don't know if it's good news or bad news, but someone sighted a baby at the park, at the department store, on a bus, at a construction site, and at the zoo. And the woman looks up and she goes, wait, or no, he says everything but the zoo. And then she goes, wait, was it also a zoo? And she goes, yeah. He goes, he's following everything in the book. And everyone immediately buys into this premise. And he goes, and they look at her and goes, what's the last thing that happens? Because apparently the mother has never read a book to her child. And she goes, well, they end up at the old folks' home. And then if they come to the VFW hall, all the old men are singing to the baby, which would have an emotional impact if we had been introduced to these people other than once before.
Yeah.
And then the mother looks at the nanny and says, thank you, in a way that says, you're never touching my child and I'm firing you immediately.
Well, throughout the movie, you know, there's not baby hijinks. It's the nanny and the mom are sitting there crying, and the mom basically admits that the kid got at least half the family love from the nanny, not from her. It's actually sad.
It is sad, but she does nothing to correct it other than to take the baby away from the nanny. Also, you hire someone to take care of your kid, and your husband forgets that he has this child because he has so many other secret families. It's not like it's exactly a loving household.
No.
And then kind of ironic punishment. She's like, I wanted him in the paper, and she holds up the paper, and it's, you know, the kidnapping story.
Yeah. So she got what she wanted. Fuck you. You lose your kids. I'm sorry. But I mean, she's rich and white, so she gets everything. Everything is brushed away. And like you said, Matt, a minute ago, they're driving down like whatever elevated highway they have in Chicago. And the baby goes, Bobo. And they're like, no, that's a TikTok. That's a clock. And they're like, no, Bobo. And they realize that the book is missing. Mm-hmm. And she calls her book the Bobo because she can't say the K's, the book. So they're like, well, why don't we go take a look? Because this baby's more important than the rest of the FBI. So they turn around because, you know, the dad's rich. And they look and they end up on a soundstage at MDM Studios. And they find the three villains because the baby's voice is being projected into Fat Tony's brain, which is something. And Joey Pants is like, no, I hear your dreams too. And then he demands from Agent Smith to be plugged back into the Matrix. That, I mean, we can agree that if we discover there's a Matrix, we'd be plugged back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because when they're in that French restaurant or whatever, that steakhouse, and he takes that big old bite of that tenderloin, I'm like, I mean, you're right, Joey Pants. I'm sorry. You're right. You're 100% right. But Joey Pants is like, I'm hearing it. Plug me back in. And they look out the window and the cops are there. And Fred Thompson is like, I'm going to run for president. And that's how the movie ends. Kind of.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, Matt, is there anything you want to add?
Eventually they get back to the house and they decide they're going to have the baby's picture taken by the old family photographer. And then the baby, when they put him to bed and just go off, and then he comes up and pulls a book off the shelf, Baby Goes to China.
It is one of the stupider but better sequel setups I've ever seen. Also, as a parent, the fact that the baby can do that in the bed means that the mattress is too high. That baby could crawl out immediately and go to China. You lower that mattress at that point. But, you know, parenting tips from a podcaster who's been drinking the whole time. So there you go.
And now that you mentioned, you know, they should have gotten the old man for the photographer, the guy at the old folks' home should have been the photographer.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because he's a pleasant enough old man, a good actor. Like, if it turned out that it was him the whole time, or that he's the one holding the baby and the dad recognizes him, anything. It's like, you're that butler I fired 10 years ago. I mean, yeah, because it's such a weird cameo role that matters.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have a cameo role that matters as much.
Should have had him, like, come in at the beginning, say, I'm here to take your picture, and like, oh, we hired someone else this year.
Right, and then he's bummed off, and then he goes back to the old folks' home. Because, like, the thing is, he hasn't worked in, like, 20 years or whatever. Like, that's what the dad said. But again, like, it's funny you bring that up, because I rewatched Wayne's World recently. And it's that Chris Farley, like, wow, he had a lot of information for just a security guard. Like, that's what a cameo should be.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that this dude... because Home Alone 2 was 92, I think, right?
Yeah.
So, like, just a couple years before was, again, one of the biggest movies of all time that John Hughes wrote. And he's like, I can make you the old decrepit man at the end who barely recognizes something. Yeah. No, dude, Turtle Doves. It was Turtle Doves.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the other Home Alone movies?
I saw the third one. I thought it was meh, and I was like in middle school. So.
Well, I don't know if I saw it with you or not. I probably didn't, but I saw it in theaters too, because I was like, the first two are great, and now I can see one in theaters, and is that the one with French Stewart?
That's the one where it's a bunch of terrorists who try and break into the house because there's like a missile technology in there or something.
They hit it in a car, a remote control car. Yeah. I love the man, but that was Roger Ebert's favorite. Because there was a reason for them to be obsessed with the house. But he was wrong sometimes. He liked Spawn.
He liked 2012.
Yeah, he did. We brought that up on the episode, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we're out of time on this one. Matt, would you recommend it?
I'd recommend seeing it at least once, because most of the movie is really funny. It just outlives its premise. You know, sometimes, you know, as Family Guy has showed us, a joke can go on too long.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy?
It's exactly what you think it would be. If that's your kind of thing, great. It wasn't mine, but it's not terrible. I mean, the baby's cute. There are some funny physical gags. But on the whole, it's Home Alone stretched out unnecessarily and not as good.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, what I would say is, in the back of my head and maybe on my shelf, I have a list of comedies that are just that for that. Like, they don't have to be thinky-thinky comedies, but they're just the kind of thing that scratch an itch. That's what this is. I don't say it's good or bad. It's not like an all-timer like Caddyshack or Blues Brothers, but it's one that you could put on, have a couple good chuckles at, and then file back away. And especially, again, HBO Max, it's free right now. There are worse ways you could spend 93 minutes or whatever it is. And there are some scenes where I laugh for a good few minutes. Overall, I don't think it's an all-timer. It's not a Home Alone. It's not, I mean, again, other John Hughes movies. It's not 16 Candles or anything. This is just a comedy for comedy's sake. There's no emotional stakes here, really. Like, I mean, like, the old, like, Mad Magazine premise was that, like, the idea, like, real versus real, The idea that a 10-year-old could not foil some criminals for Home Alone, this is doubly sure for a toddler, man, or an infant, a 9-month-old. There's no movie here. But that doesn't mean it's not funny, you know? Yeah. And I guess since I'm the one to blame for this one, I pulled this out like the deepest recesses of my brain. If you've got anything like that, send it to us, because that's what we do. But in the meantime, my pizza's getting cold, so I'm going to say the following. Thanks for subscribing to Patreon. And it makes us great, makes us happy, makes us genuinely pleased that you guys who are listening to this are doing what you do, because we do it for you. We put a lot of time and effort, money into this. And I'm going to just talking about Matt deducting his mileage on his taxes for this. You know, we spend money buying the website and buying the gear and making everything work. So thank you for paying us to do this, because we do it because you guys respond. In the meantime, you can look up next month when we release our myopia prescription to see what's coming up in the future months. But I can tell you, the secret sauce here is for the entire month of December, we're doing only Harry Potter. And the panel is going to be myself, Mr. Daniel, Kelly, who hasn't been on in 4 years. The entire month of December, it's going to be the same panel while I figure out other movies with people to do it, because I wanted the girls on the podcast who are obsessed with Harry Potter to talk about it, because I am nonplussed. And that will also be your Patreon episode for December, January, and February when we round it out. But thank you for listening. Thank you for Matt and Jeremy, and keep subscribing and keep listening to Cineprov and here while we put a bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.